Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 371 of the Roguecast, recorded May 3rd, 2022. Enter the Weird Alliverse.
It's going to be May.
Yes, May, a.k.a. the month of free comics,
yep,
a.k.a.
Yep.
when things start getting hot outside.
It is the week of free comics. We have free comic day on Saturday.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, you will be mere days from it.
Now, usually we would do like a preview thing, but this year we have not had time to open up all the stuff. We don't even know what all there is.
We're so tired. We're so very tired.
They're comics. Yep. We're giving them to you for free.
Yep.
But also, you can, just by going to freecomicbookday.com, you can peruse all the titles.
Yep.
They have a full listing of what every single company is putting out.
Although, importantly, we don't have just that. We have like stuff from the previous years as well. We've got we're going to have a huge selection of comics from which to choose from.
Yeah.
We're also moving back to the sort of our older model for Free Comic Book Day, so we'll have tables inside set up with various...
You gotta get in line and walk through and bring out your stuff.
And although it is a bustling day, we keep the line moving pretty solidly. It's you're not going to be like... And this is actually a reason why we don't, like, some shops have sometimes done signings and things like that. And we have done that at times, but ultimately opted not to. And I'm glad we did.
It's just Free Comics. You know, like, what are you doing for Free Comic Day? It's just Free Comics.
Because then you find yourself standing in line for like 2 hours or something, and it's scalding hot and stuff like that. And so this is the day about the comics. We want to give you back the comics, give back to y'all. And
hopefully it won't be scalding hot.
I don't think it'll be
100 degrees on Friday, on Saturday.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like
the earliest,
moved up
the earliest
fast.
In 24 years.
Yeah,
that it's been this.
Now, luckily, if you should have to wait outside, and you know, like the line ebbs and flows.
Yeah, but it shouldn't.
But quite often there's a line that sticks outside the door a little bit. You'll be in shade and stuff.
Yeah,
that's another advantage to this complex.
And also, we'll crank the AC down, so that once you get inside, it'll be delightful cool.
We are going to turn it Arctic the night before, so that like even if there's a lot of people in the store, it can only make it sub-Arctic.
Also, one of our staffers is dressing as Squirrel Girl.
Hell yeah.
I am considering wearing my Captain America costume. We'll see.
Yep.
I might be a Jedi.
Nick might be a Jedi.
Take a chill. I don't have any plans. I'm sorry.
Dave should wear like a Discovery shirt or something. At least some form of T-shirt cosplay.
Yeah, maybe so. I could probably do that.
Or it's not too late, Dave. Set up a full suit of Halo armor before the weekend.
Oh yeah. I've been thinking about getting into cosplay. Halo armor seems like a good thing to start.
Yeah, I'd start with that.
You know what? I should probably build a warthog to get the full effect.
Yeah, full working warthog.
Banshee,
you know that. You know that little kitty car that's out back? This little electronic car for kids?
I'll turn it into
a warthog.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Those probably exist.
Warthogs? Right?
Like a thing you can buy
warthogs
for kids.
Warthogs are real.
Little kid cars. Those, what do you even call those? Battery-powered cars?
Yeah.
There's got to be a warthog-themed one.
My niece has one.
Probably.
She enjoys it.
A warthog-themed one?
Yes.
No. Niece has a wraith.
Oh, she's with the Covenant?
Die, scum. Die, human scum.
I mean, we're almost there.
Yeah. You're like, I get it, Covenant. Yeah, I get it.
All right, so other than Free Comic Book Day, other store stuff. We got a couple big games. We got Libertalia Winds of Galecrest in this week. That is the new game from the guys who do Scythe and Wingspan. This is originally a game that came out in 2012. This is like the new, fancier version. I guess it's been out of print for a long time.
Okay.
Basically, you are sky pirates. You command a crew, and so do your rivals, and you're basically trying to make your pirate fleet. You want to get the best loot.
Nice. That sounds like a rare combination of... Euro-style gameplay, but kind of grabber American-style themes.
They say it is a competitive medium-weight hand management pirate game.
Cool. Well, that sounds good. I mean, you cannot basically get a better pedigree than Wingspan and Scythe.
Yeah, there's been good reviews. Also, we got Founders of Teotihuacan. Teotihuacan.
Teotihuacan.
Which is the Aztec city, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
This is a new sort of city-building game, and it's not tied in. It's a new standalone. It's not tied into the previous games, but it's like a tile placement game. And you're trying to design the city. And then we got the Pathfinder Book of the Dead.
Yep.
Which
what is that?
I don't know, it's undead and that kind of stuff.
Okay, all things, probably necromancy and cities of dead, and you know, I'm sure sort of all sorts of spins on that. Maybe you can have a dead pet.
There's also Vampire Second Inquisition, which is basically the bad guys trying to hunt down vampires.
This is to the Vampire RPG.
RPG, yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then we got Level 20, which is... Guild Force 9 is doing a bunch of Pathfinder and Starfinder games. This is one of the first ones they're doing, just like the D&D games that they do. Level 20 is you are all kobolds trying to escape a party of adventurers that need just one kobold kill to get to level 20. So you're... Is it a board game or an RPG?
Yeah,
it's a board game.
Okay.
You are all dodging these super dangerous high-level player characters who just want to kill you so they can get the experience.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, which is a fun idea.
Yeah, no, that's fun. I like
and that. Then we got a new roll and write called Explorers, which is... I've got the app version of it, and it's very hard...
Really?
But it's super engaging.
Do you mean high difficulty level, or do you mean hard to learn?
No, easy to learn. But, like, I'm looking at the scores I got, and my scores were all like, you need to go back to Explorer School.
Now, is that just you? No.
I am a dullard.
Now, you played some games. I trust you to know a difficulty level.
But, yeah, it's pretty cool. You have this little map, and you reveal terrain that you can use, and then you're, like, going and trying to cross off three different kinds of, like, food supplies... And keys let you into these temples, and as the rounds go on, the temples are worth less points. You want to get to them first.
Yep.
And there's all kinds of stuff on the board that once you go across, you get little abilities and things.
Okay.
Very cool. All right, we got a lot of news, so let's just jump right into that.
Okay.
Let's do the comic stuff first. Let's start with the big thing that Neil Adams has passed.
Yeah, man. The legends don't come much bigger than that.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's like any you know, if you're, I'm going to say, over 30. That you probably know who Neil Adams is if you read comics.
Maybe we're 40. I'm not sure.
But yeah, and that's the thing. Is like he's a legend. Like maybe a tier just one down from Kirby as far as like influence level.
Yeah.
But like he did define style for like a whole generation. If you like any comic artist that's realistic,
you
whether
like
it's
Neil Adams.
Brian yeah. Hitch who basically was the influence of the whole Marvel MCU. Mm-hmm. Like his designs were influenced on all that. If you like. Bill Sienkiewicz from and Moon Knight and all of that look, mm-hmm. that was all inspired by Neil Adams. Almost every realistic artist, anybody who does photo reference, who does like shadows that kind of like have multi-light sources and stuff like mm-hmm. that, but also people who do that but are also dynamic. You know, it's not just like photo reference and it looks static. Neil Adams was a legend because he also like did big superhero action.
He also did some pretty notable like. He did the designs for the X-Men costumes before it became the giant size X-Men, right? Wasn't those?
He actually was not the costume guy there.
Oh, okay.
He did a run right before the big X-Men thing where he got X-Men back on the radar because they would have probably been canceled otherwise.
Okay.
It was a famous run with Roy Thomas, but they were still actually wearing like their older costumes that were kind of somewhat dated. But he did like Havoc's costume then, mm-hmm. and he was like the one who gave him that really cool looking bolts when he would fire them with the sort of concentric circles.
He also he did design the Tim Drake Robin costume.
Yep,
that was him.
But I guess we haven't said like what he's most famous for is probably like a few things from the 70s. Bringing Batman back is probably the biggest thing. He was the artist with Denny O'Neil writing on Batman when Batman was kind of really recovering from the campy 60s stuff.
Yeah,
and suddenly they come back with this like. Kind of more serious Batman, the first Ra's al Ghul stories, Joker back to being kind of a creepy menace, and these you know really amazing art from him. So that's
And also Denny O'Neil, he worked with Denny O'Neil on Green Arrow, Green Lantern,
right? And that was the hard traveling hero storyline that kind of was tackling social issues of the era, racism, drugs, poverty, systemic issues. Maybe not argued with the deepest of depth, but certainly sincerely done with, broadly speaking, for those of you who haven't read it, Green Arrow representing the hot-headed liberal mm-hmm. and Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, as the kind of law enforcement, law and order right-wing guy.
Bootlicker.
The bootlicker.
Space bootlicker.
Actually, everybody kind of has to learn a little bit in there, but even like the Guardian who's traveling with them ends up kind of, I think, bucking the system a little bit. Like it's always still ultimately kind of a little bit subversive and countercultural, and all the big comic writers are a little left-leaning.
Well, Neil Adams also he formed his own studio,
Gap Continuity Studios,
and he was sort of advocating for returning artists. So he fought for artist rights as well.
Yeah. Yeah, like in a big way, like for like I don't know if people know, but like the legendary Jack Kirby, who like basically created all or much of the Marvel Universe with Stan Lee, and more than Stan Lee, depending on who you ask.
Yep.
Like, he would, like, draw these pages for him, and they wouldn't give him his art back. That was just standard back in those days. A lot of times because, you know, there wasn't a ton of money to be made in comics in the, like, 60s and 50s when he was coming up in it. They would actually just use the other side of it for some other artist to draw on or something like that. Yeah. They would just, like, they didn't even think about it. There was no aftermarket on eBay where, you know, you could sell a page that had a big picture of the Fantastic Four on it for $10,000. Like, that hadn't come around yet. But that market did start to open up in the 70s with original art at conventions. And Kirby couldn't get his art. And, like, Neil Adams and other people, like, helped lead the fight for that to get returned to him. And I think broadly for creator rights, too, across the board, you know, for people having ownership of it. Like, you know, you could maybe argue that the modern-day Image Comics, which is all about creator ownership, wouldn't exist but for people like Neil Adams.
Yeah. And, of course, he believed in the Hollow Earth.
He did. It's not quite that. That's how we always characterize it. Neil Adams was a character.
He was. He was.
And I think, I actually don't know if I ever met Neil Adams. I don't think I did. But he was kind of a character, always a little self-promotery, maybe a little egotistical.
Yeah.
But he did have this weird theory of continental drift that is what it is. And I've seen, like, his drawings illustrating it, and he was real into it.
Yeah.
So into it, he based an entire Batman story, like, on it.
Did he? I didn't.
Oh,
I
he did the Hollow Earth stuff in the.
That's right. I remember there was some crazy Batman. Like he was as a writer, he was a great artist.
Yes.
But I'll say this. I remember hearing him interviewed on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman podcast. Mm-hmm. Super fun guy to listen to. People should go and listen to that if you want to know more about him, because it's a great interview, and those podcasts are free out there. But yeah, that's it's a sad loss of, like, a true legend. Like, that guy is as legendary as it is right now.
Speaking of comic legends, maybe a little problematic, Frank Miller.
Yep.
Alongside uncontroversial figure Dan DiDio, we'll be launching a new venture called Frank Miller Productions, or Frank Miller Presents, that is going to be a new comics line.
Has Frank Miller become a necromancer? I mean,
I don't know.
Are you just talking about the fact that he looks like a lich?
Yes.
Well, he drank a lot.
He did.
Yeah. Supposedly he's gotten clean, and that's a good thing.
Yes. I believe a combination of cigarettes and alcohol gave him the skin of Kramer when he, like, turned his apartment into, like, a humidor.
So they're going to do Sin City 1858, which is a return to Sin City set in the West Day, and Ronin Book 2, which is a... Ronin is like an 80s book that he did.
Yeah.
And also two things called Pandora and Ancient Enemies.
He has talked about that Sin City Western project since, I think, the 1990s. That would be Sin City probably when it was called Basin City. I guess that is the technical name of the town. The sad truth is... Miller is not like the creative powerhouse he was in the 80s and 90s. He, I think, hit all of his, for me at least, biggest stuff in the 80s. But there was, like, a pretty... His Sin City, especially the early stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
And even some of his... what was his other project that he did with, like, Dave Gibbons? Give Me Liberty? That was a pretty interesting dystopian future with kind of some strong satirical elements.
That one's, like, forgotten. I don't even think it's in print anymore.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
But then he did Holy Terror, which was Islamophobic as hell.
Yeah.
Which he has at least walked back his opportunity. Apparently since then, he did Dark Knight 3 with Brian Azzarello.
Right.
The Master
Race. And then he did Cursed, which is a Netflix adaptation of a story he co-created.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
And apparently he's been dabbling in NFTs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But let's also not forget, like, All-Star Batman and Robin. Don't forget the unfinished goddamn Batman.
Right.
Yeah. And some weird stuff like that.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's been a while since Miller has done anything great, unfortunately.
Yeah. I will say this. Like, Miller, at his peak, did some of my all-time favorite comics. There's just no way around it.
What about Dan DiDio?
Dan DiDio presided over at least a few comics that I liked. But literally all he's doing is producing this, right?
Yep.
He's not going to write? I mean, he is a writer. He does...
I don't know.
He's not going to be writing Sin City. That's always just a Frank Miller joint.
He's probably just there to ruin things a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, now he might actually excel because he's no longer fixated on the notion of killing Nightwing.
What if somehow he does? He like somehow Nightwing's death works into these.
DC has gotten so much better in just like the 2 or 3 years.
Is he gonna be a little like Lex Luthor? Like now that Superman's out of the way, he can actually help.
That doesn't happen to Lex Luthor either. Lex Luthor keeps bugging Superman. No.
Just in case people don't know, Dan DiDio was the
publisher
for DC for like what 15 years or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like roughly, I think since the early 2000s to just a few years.
Basically,
ago.
Right about the time DC started to really suck until the time it started to not.
Yeah. Unless you really like that era, in which case it was their time of glory.
In which case. Sorry for your bad days.
Good stuff came out of that era.
There was some good stuff. No.
Because here's the thing. Good creators always find stories to tell.
52 was a good story.
52 was... Was that DiDio's era?
It was.
Absolutely. All right, okay. Yeah.
All right.
That was Wednesday Comics.
All right.
And I think a lot of people would say that, you know, something like Scott Snyder's Batman run, like a full 5-6 years or whatever that was. Anyway... But he also presided over, like, Identity Crisis.
Yep.
And,
all the crises.
And a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Anyway, I'm happy that DiDio is working with Miller because the two of them can go off, do their own little things, and not ruin anything but the things that that Miller was doing probably already. And that said, while I'm very cynical about it, I kind of want to read this since the 1858, and I'm curious about Ronin, too, even though I've never read Ronin.
His art's kind of become unchained lately, and that's just like a very deliberate, I think, decision on his part. Many artists, their styles become much looser over time.
Do you think he would give up the reins on Sin City and just write it and have someone else draw it?
I don't think that would be a
great
thing either.
Normally I would say no, but he's always had like pinups in Sin City from other artists. But I think he does want it to be his thing. There's never been a single Sin City story that wasn't his.
He didn't draw Dark Knight 3, right? Wasn't it Rizzo? Was it Eduardo Rizzo?
No, it was one of the Kuberts.
Yeah.
He was doing it in a sort of a Miller style.
Okay.
So it was meant to look like Andy. Yeah, Miller and Klaus Janson.
But like I was just thinking, like, if you were gonna get somebody else, like Eduardo Rizzo could probably draw the hell out of Sin City.
Yeah.
No, there's a bunch of artists who can do very, very good black and white work. But I have to admit, it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, A, I think it's probably mostly run its course, and B, you know, it does feel like it kind of... I like the synergy with Miller of his art and writing. Yeah. It's part of what I like about it. But yeah, I will for sure try that one. What was the other one?
Ronin.
Ronin, too.
I've actually never read Ronin. Me neither. I think I've tried to read it a few times and I found it boring.
I, too, have not read Ronin.
So I can't really get excited for the sequel, but it is like a cyberpunk samurai story kind of thing with art that like Rob Liefeld would lift about like 100 times, that one with him stabbing a person behind him.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He really loved to redraw that panel. anyway, so I wish him luck. I like a comeback story. I want him to make good. I want him to be purged of his sins and only have them in his city.
Speaking of things everybody loves but us, the Batman 2 has been officially greenlit.
None of us hated it, I think. Nick, maybe
Nick
was the closest. His hatred is growing.
My hatred grows.
No,
although
Nick,
my hatred wanes.
You'll revisit
like,
in a few years.
You're
going to be
like
Father
and revisit it, and you'll like it more and more as time goes on.
Well, now that it's free, I could revisit it, but I'm not, like, itching to. And I honestly think the...
Something is the way.
There are good parts. There are good pieces to that puzzle.
I still,
just put together in square holes.
I still say Pattinson's the best live action Batman we've gotten. I think he was more He was more like Batman than any other Batman we've gotten.
Michael Keaton is the best Batman.
No, Michael Keaton's the best Bruce Wayne.
No. But best Bruce Wayne is easily Christian Bale.
No.
Absolutely.
No.
Without a doubt. He portrayed him with the kind of charming bon vivant. But with a little bit of edge.
I kind of agree with Dave a little bit.
Even if you don't like those movies, you have to say he did a good job on
that. He was fine. I like my Bruce Wayne a little goofier.
I mean...
That's why I like the Bruce Wayne in the animated series. He should be a little bit bumbling.
Yeah, I guess.
And I don't...
Keaton was just Keaton.
I mean,
like Burton was...
You're not
Burton.
Wrong, but that's the thing. I think he felt more like... He felt like more of the Bruce Wayne that I wanted.
So not George Clooney.
Definitely not George Clooney.
Clooney was a fine.
He should have been, but he should have been.
He had the luck.
Working with super.
Val Kilmer always felt odd.
But anyway, I thought Pattinson did a good job as Batman himself.
I do actually think he did a good job. I actually was not in love with his Batman. I'm not quite sure what. He was actually almost a little too brooding. Kind of wanted a little bit of range of expression.
There was no divergent from Batman and Bruce Wayne. He was just that one character.
That's why I don't think it's Bruce Wayne was very.
The movie is also very tonally similar throughout. It kind of like goes. It starts out at 7 and it stays at 7.
But it's possible that the tone might change in the second one.
To double check, the announcement is there's definitely a second one.
They're doing a second one, and that's probably
suspected based on its wild success.
Is it Matt Reeves is coming back for it?
Okay. Matt Reeves and Pattinson.
So, Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight, I think, is notably better than Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. And no. Batman Returns, I don't think is better than Batman, but it's an interesting sequel. I think that once you set everything up, there's room to do a lot of stuff with the sequel. So while I'm not in love with the Batman, the stuff I liked makes me think, and the fact that Matt Reeves has done a pretty good. Did he direct all the Planet of the Apes movies or just the first one?
No, he didn't.
That whole trilogy or whatever was really good.
Yeah, it was.
So I feel like I'm curious to see where he goes next, even though I wasn't super into the Batman.
I think he'll probably play close to the vest and do the whole like brooding darkness and introduce like Court of Owls.
God, I hope they don't do the Joker. I hope the Joker isn't like heavily featured.
I think he's actually too smart to do something so familiar.
Yeah.
But I could see him doing something where like his Joker will be played more like Hannibal Lecter. Batman has to consult him on something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't love that idea either, but I just mean like that. Something like that where he plays some small role in it, but he's not the villain.
Yeah.
And I think that could potentially be interesting. I sort of wish he hadn't introduced him at all, but
yeah,
whatever.
Me too.
People have been wondering, will they introduce a Robin? Can this world support a Robin?
Yeah, none of the Batmans have felt very Batman-y.
Hard to imagine that the vibe of this really feels supportive of bringing in a kid.
That's the thing. Like the next, I want them to do a live-action Batman where Robin doesn't feel out of place.
Right.
And that's why I know they've made a Batman I want to see.
Yeah.
But
that broadly speaking, they've never really pulled that off
or seemed to have much interest in it.
Keaton didn't even. I mean, that didn't. No. That world didn't need a Robin.
Yeah, and
even
also
though
it's
in
one of those
kind
like
of insanity,
all those Tim Burton movies had like a little bit of weird like R-rated moments in them.
Yeah.
Weird sexual innuendo, sudden weird moments of violence where the Penguin would bite somebody's nose or whatever, and blood would spray.
Yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Cats magically return life to a.
That's not weird. That's true.
That happens.
I feel like there's not like a Batman movie that I would be excited about no matter what. Even something that looked truer to the comics, maybe that could catch me. But I've seen a lot of Batman movies. I kind of like them sometimes for their weird differences from the thing. But I'm happy enough to let people who enjoyed this continue to enjoy it. I'm not gonna crap on it, but I just the same. I might just skip the next
one. I'm
gonna
make memes.
I didn't want to see this one.
Yeah.
And now that I had seen it, I should have stuck to my guns.
Same.
but I would have been infinitely curious. You know, it was too big a thing to not.
Honestly,
see,
I think
guess.
If a Batman movie comes out, we're all gonna see it, regardless of whether or not we say
it.
You know what? Here's the thing.
See the sequel.
I skipped the second Amazing Spider-Man.
Good call. Me too.
I haven't seen the Eternals. I've seen a lot of movies, but like I will skip movies.
Yeah, that's true.
I press play.
Nick presses play.
We also saw the first production still from Margot Robbie's Barbie movie.
I've been told is not going to feature the Barbie song,
Barbie Girl song from Aqua,
which is a little sad
because apparently Mattel hated. Mattel like sued them, and
there's bad blood.
There's bad blood.
That's too bad.
Yep, it feels like a thing that should happen.
So I saw the still. There's not a lot to say about it.
But it's cute.
Yeah,
it's cute. I have a feeling the movie is going to be one of those clever than anybody expects it to be.
I think so too.
And. I honestly don't expect that Margot Robbie would have signed on otherwise. She's got a pretty good track record.
Yep.
Agreed.
So, another one I wish well.
Then we had a couple big shakeups. Fast and Furious 10 lost Justin Lin, and has apparently they haven't 100%
Justin Lin is really the linchpin of that series,
but
right?
But they've gained Louis Leterrier, who did the Transporter movies.
And a lot of people will say that Vin Diesel is the linchpin.
Those people are wrong. You know who says that? Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Which I think was the problem.
Yeah, apparently he did leave over issues with Vin Diesel. Yeah,
issues with Vin Diesel, but also, like, that they're constantly, I guess, I saw an article about this, and they're basically saying, like, Vin Diesel basically, like, they present him with stunt ideas, and he's like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
And then he changes his mind, like, never mind. And the screenwriters have to basically make all that work.
Uh-huh.
Which, I mean, we've seen the Fast and Furious. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That tracks as to how the movies happen.
I mean, it's weirdly that we got 8 movies that were actually coherent and fun.
Right.
And then the 9th one was just kind of there.
Yeah. Well, let me ask, how many of them did Justin Lin do?
5.
Yeah, like, was it like the last 5?
He did 3, then he did 5, and then 6 and 7 and 9?
I believe that's 5, correct.
Which I still think is maybe the best of them.
It is the best. Yeah.
But it does not
have the Cuban Mile.
The Cuban Mile is such a good opening that it almost elevates that one to...
And you know what's interesting is that one is not Justin Lin. That is F. Gary Gray,
yeah.
Who they tried to get back, but he was in the midst of doing something else. I don't remember what.
So the guy who's doing it is the guy who made the Transporter movies, of which there were 2?
There were 2.
First one was a lot of fun.
No, there were more, but he did too.
Okay. First one was a lot of fun. The second one was not as good, but they were both high octane energy ones.
Yeah.
They fit within that sort of style.
It fits. Yeah.
And also, by the way, since they're bringing him in, is Clive Owen in these movies already?
No, he's not.
The Transporter needs to go ahead and show up in
the closing credits. He's not the Transporter. Jason, he's the driver. Jason Statham,
who is in these movies.
In these movies, yeah.
Okay. That's too bad. Then they can't quite pull that.
They should reveal that he has an evil twin brother who is the Transporter.
We haven't quite done that yet.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was hoping Justin Lin would stick around, finish it out.
Yeah, me too.
I wish Vin Diesel's ego didn't...
Here's the thing. I know that this is Vin Diesel's franchise, and I get it, but he has now driven off 2 of the best parts of it.
It's not his franchise. I mean, he's made it his franchise.
But he's made it his franchise.
For the time, there was a time when he was not in the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, and it wasn't
selling.
What did he drive off? The Rock?
He drove off The Rock, and now he's driven off Justin Lin. And honestly,
you know,
I would rather have The Rock and Justin Lin than Vin Diesel.
You know what? I think I could do without The Rock because he brings the. Although I like The Rock's presence in them. He brings the most military aspect of it,
yeah,
and I would
true.
Like for them to become... I want it to end with them going like being like outlaws again and not military contractors.
I get that. Yeah, I don't know. I think that 5 brought in The Rock, and then he was in most of the movies that I saw that I really liked.
Yeah.
And so I definitely missed him.
Unfortunately,
Dom's
breaking up the family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out he can't live up to the movies.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little wary of it, but I'll at least want to see the last one. I know, Dave, you went off it after 9 anyway.
It says a lot that I own 9, and I've only watched it the once in theaters. I tried rewatching it, and I couldn't.
Really? I enjoyed it when we saw it in the theater.
I need to sit down and
actually...
I think
it's not without moments.
Yeah.
Sure.
I had fun with it, but... It was the right... I mean, when we were watching it, like, everybody in the theater was laughing. Like, it was a sort of a, this is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, not, like, laughing like, this is the stupidest thing ever. But I think they were mostly laughing the way that they did at the others, which is kind of good-naturedly. Like, this is good, goofy fun.
But there was an element of this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
There might have been more so than usual.
Yeah. I do think it got dumber in 9.
Yeah.
Anyway, we all really liked that franchise, and I think we've all soured a little bit on it. And this definitely soured me a little bit more.
It's shocking that they made it to, what, 9 or 10 movies
exactly.
or whatever without
plus
getting
one
to that.
Spin-off.
Plus one spinoff.
And I like the spinoff. I'm disappointed we didn't get more of that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Finn.
Anyway, also, John Watts has exited as director of Fantastic Four, which I think is a really notable thing.
Yeah.
I think at some point they must have gotten him excited. Like, Feige must have gone to him... Or Phage, or whatever it is. We should at some point learn how to pronounce this.
Kevin Feige, I think.
Kevin Feige, I think you're right. It must have gotten him excited about doing Fantastic Four, and I think he discovered as he was doing it, he's like, hey, I was supposed to be an indie director, and I wound up the guy directing 3 Spider-Man movies. And I think he's like, I don't want to do this for the next... And I think he probably was like, if I do this, they're going to want me back for 2 and 3 of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and he's probably going to be like, and I won't want to hand it off to somebody and see them ruin it.
And I'm going to want... And he's like, this isn't like one movie. This is like 10 more years of my life.
If that was his thought and his feelings, then he made the right decision.
I think that's the thing. I think he probably want to go back to making other movies that are not Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, which I can respect.
I know also, like, sometimes, like, you do a big budget movie like that where you're, like, you're wrangling... I mean, I'm sure that last Spider-Man had so much to wrangle with all the multiple Spider-Men and other stuff.
And secrecy and COVID. Secrecy. Yeah.
That it was probably... He probably finished it and he's just exhausted.
Yeah.
It has to be, like, just exhausted.
Yeah.
He's a really good director that has proved himself...
Yeah.
...has proven that he can work with a budget... And,
yeah, I think he's going to have a pretty good career.
He's going to have a good career.
Now it's time for him to go tell a story about a strange couple who finds each other in a coffee shop.
Yes.
But I feel like the because they found him, and he had only done the one movie, the Cop Car. Cop Car. And Cop Car was good. I feel like Marvel and
that they'll, Feige there's a decent chance they'll pick somebody else good.
Pick somebody else along those same lines.
I agree. I'm not worried about this because honestly, at this point, they've proven themselves. They've had one sort of stumble for me, and that was Eternals. And even that was just sort of I get how they got there.
Yeah,
I don't hate Eternals, but I thought it was a weaker movie.
I liked it. Yeah. So I mean, I will be one of the people who enjoyed it, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If you liked it so much, Nick, who's your favorite Eternal?
Gilgamesh.
All right. He had an answer.
That's incorrect, though. The answer is Kanto. But what's his name? Yeah, his name I can't remember. Come on, Gianni's character.
Oh. He's no, Kanto's correct. Gilgamesh and
the Eternals fight.
Angelina Jolie is Athena.
It was
cool.
It was fun.
But, I mean, they'll find somebody good.
Yep. And we know from past experience, like, they had Edgar Wright. Everyone was like, oh, A-Man's going to suck. A-Man was great. Peyton Reed was
a really good fit.
The one thing the Marvel's Cinematic Universe has done that the Marvel Comics always did is that basically the universe and the characters are bigger than the creators. And I understand why creators bristle at that, but as a fan, I don't care. I want the stuff to be good.
I think finding a lower-level director who has talent is a better way of trying to shoehorn a massive director who knows what they're doing, who has an ego and everything, and will fight and ultimately leave.
I agree. I think this is for the best for
everybody. I think with Doctor Strange, we're seeing kind of the opposite, because Sam Raimi has been on that weird kind of catapult of Hollywood where his output has been very low lately, and this is probably going to catapult him back into a pretty big spotlight.
It is wild to me that this guy, the guy who basically created, I mean, Spider-Man in a lot of ways was a big launching point for the superhero universe.
Completely.
And for him to get to come back in and play around in
this
now. Did
you see this article floating around that he was the studio's 19th choice for director?
Oh, wow, that's insane. That's crazy.
So, I mean,
we're number 19.
Yeah, I'm excited for Sam Raimi to do that. I am too. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'm not worried about this. I'm a little bummed because this is a tricky job. There have been three failed, really bad Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah.
And same with Spider-Man. Coming in and basically doing like there have been, this has already been done. How am I going to do it and make it its own thing? Showed the capacity to do it. And so I was like, okay, Fantastic Four is in safe hands. And now I'm like, man, it's a tough job.
That is like, would give me so much pause. There have been so many outings with this property and they've all failed.
Yep.
Even though to some degree, I even like the original one. I love Michael Chiklis's The Thing.
It's okay.
It's not like horrible, other than their Doctor Doom. Their Doctor Doom, Julian McMahon, was awful.
Yep. But I feel like the nice thing about coming in on it, though, is like, it's not the properties of the problem. You could look at those and be like, oh, no, I see what you guys did wrong.
Yeah. You have, I guess you could look at it that way. You have a blueprints on what not to do.
Yeah. They also did some swapping. The Marvels, which was originally going to be in February, and Ant-Man 3, which was originally going to be in July, have swapped. So Ant-Man 3, Quantumania, will be coming out in February, and the Marvels will be in July. I'm going to guess post-production stuff.
Is Quantumania like a play on the Who's Quadrophenia?
I think it probably is.
Just curious.
But it's also going to be a lot of time travel-y stuff.
Yeah.
Because we know Kang's in it.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Post-production or story elements or
don't care,
reveals.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah, whatever.
Is Black Panther still supposed to come out this year?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Like
November, I believe?
Yeah, November. So we haven't seen anything on that yet.
Nope.
Interesting. Oh, and this year's supposed to be the
They're waiting for their lead actress to stop being anti-vax.
I mean, then maybe why would they not move Ant-Man too? Because Evangeline Lilly is also anti-vax.
Yeah. I don't think Letitia Wright is going to change her stance on that.
Yep. I think they're hoping people will just forget.
I mean, yeah.
Which the internet's been very good about just forgetting that kind of thing, letting it lie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
In the big scheme of things, with entertainment, I've got to take it all with a bit of a grain of salt, because if you pick at it too hard, you will find there are problematic people in everything.
They're all terrible.
And we all got to be able to have our entertainment and blow off steam and stuff like that.
I'm going to go watch a crazy man fly some planes at the end of this month. So.
What are you talking about?
Top Gun 2.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Mr. Scientology. Sometime during the pandemic, I remember he was blowing up at people for not wearing masks. He was almost like the opposite thing. He was like a tyrant about the masks in a typically Hollywood egotistical way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. I actually I saw a trailer for that the other day and I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of do want to see it.
Yeah.
Did you see Randy did the bit I was that who got him at the flight school, because you know he is a Maverick guy and like they didn't want him, he probably would have been the 19th choice.
Yeah.
Admiral.
Yeah, Admiral Iceman.
Iceman, yeah.
You know they like they're doing something for his, because he can't speak anymore.
Yeah. Right. I was wondering how they were getting. I saw it. They showed like a picture of him on a table, and it was kind of like classic Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Or maybe photoshopped version to show him older, but not as old as he is now.
Yeah.
And I wondered if there's going to be like a poignant scene in it where you see like he meets him again or something like that, and you see, and they just go ahead and are kind of upfront that Val Kilmer has done this, has happened to him.
Well, they're doing. They said they're doing some kind of CGI thing or something.
Okay. I wonder if we might see both. Like, both kind of a heyday Iceman, or that is to say, you know, 20 years ago,
right.
Which would still be, like, the midway point.
Right.
And then maybe see him as he is now, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an opportunity for some good storytelling if they handle it right.
Across the Spider-Verse broke my heart and is delayed until 2023.
That's Spider-Verse 2, basically.
I was so excited because I saw the trailer with...
Oh, there's
something. Everything Everywhere All at Once had the trailer for it. No, Sonic 2 had the trailer.
I was gonna say, I do not remember seeing that.
Sonic 2 is the thing I saw that had the trailer for it. And at the end, it had the thing for October 2022. I was like, oh, it's this year. And then the next week, they're like, yeah, we're moving to 2023. But they also said it's going to have 240 characters, 6 universes.
That's insane. 240 characters.
So, well, you know what they mean is they're going to see a lot of things, but not they're all going to try and flesh them out.
So I have a friend, Danny Danger, who they write for a Lost Bell Souls, some site.
Yeah, and I remember that. I know
they wrote
that
a piece about like the 6 of the Spider-Men we might see, and I thought they had some good picks. But like, I'm almost certain we'll see Spider-Punk. Like that seems like a no-brainer. But like maybe like the Ben Parker Spider-Man, maybe the six arm one of the six arm
Spider-Man. Which one is Ben Parker? Is that the
old man Spidey from the original Spider-Verse story?
Oh right, I bet we see if they want to go kind of a little far afield and kind of nuts is the Captain Universe Spider-Man.
Captain Universe Spider-Man.
that would make sense to put in there. Yeah. But by the way,
also people were suggesting Ben Reilly.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
They were saying Superior Spider-Man would be a cool one to see.
Definitely seeing 2099.
Yeah, for sure.
What I say this jokingly. What was Carrie Andrews's thing that had Spider-Man with radioactive semen?
Wrong.
No, definitely not.
Wrong.
What was that called?
Spider-Man Rain.
Yeah, everybody definitely go read that online. It's great.
But also, I saw people talk about like the Marvel 1602 Spider-Man would be a cool one to bring in there.
Oh, man, yeah, that'd be. There's some crazy cool deep cuts you could do.
There's some fun stuff. So
I think there's got to be something that we're never gonna like. That's gonna be the weirdest thing. Like I believe they did have a crossover with Spider-Man into the Crystar universe, toy line that had people made of crystal and lava and stuff. Now, I don't know if they would ever even care to get the license back just for this little snippet, but I bet there's going to be something like that, something bonkers.
Almost certainly we'll see the Japanese Spider-Man and his mecha.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there'll be all kinds of cool stuff.
You know who we won't see? We will not see Assassin Spider-Man.
You don't think so?
What's Assassin Spider-Man?
He's too dark.
I don't know. He's a Spider-Verse or a spider. He shows up in the
He was like a guy who kills. Like, uses guns and stuff.
Yeah. They might could find a way to make it work.
I bet they could. But we'll see.
As long as Nicolas Cage comes back as Spider-Man 1.
I think all the people are coming
back.
But
I guess we won't know until the far-flung year of 2023.
Yeah, it's too far out.
There's still an embarrassment of Marvel riches, though.
Yes, it's true.
We get Moon Knight finishes this week.
Yeah, another
and there's even a feature movie this week.
Yeah, that's true.
Another comic development. Seconds, the Brian Lee O'Malley,
his follow up, his second his book follow-up after
to Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
Blake Lively is going to direct it.
Yeah,
and this is a good graphic novel. It's just been out of print for a long time.
Yeah,
I actually have not read this one.
I really liked it.
Okay. I like Seconds over Scott Pilgrim. It's a different vibe though, and it was maybe a very deliberate turnaround for him because it has a woman protagonist.
Yep.
She's like a chef, I think, and small business owner who's like trying to get her restaurant to take off.
Yeah.
And has had problems both in like unlucky in love and maybe facing some issues, I think, with her restaurant, like costs and stuff.
Yep.
And she's like in Ontario. And I remember he does these really beautiful cityscapes that's drawn in like his cartoony style, but also very detailed. And like I'm really wondering how they'll do that, because I think just showing the city won't be enough. I hope it looks like it does in the comics.
Yeah.
But The hook of it is that she finds this, I can only describe it as a magic mushroom that looks like a little Super Mario mushroom, and if you take a bite of it, like when you go to bed, as like a weird video game kind of thing, this is the closest it gets to Scott Pilgrim, you can then make one change, I think, in your life that you can think about, and you'll wake up the next day and that change will have been implemented. Yeah. And it'll be like if you had always, it had happened, like, oh, what if I broke up with that person and dated that person instead? And then you're going to wake up the next day and you could find out what happened. And yeah. if you're like, oh, well, that was a mistake. Let me undo things, or let me try something else different. So it is about...
Do you have a finite amount of mushrooms?
I don't remember. But I know that she does try a bunch of different things. It is definitely about the... You know, decisions you make in your life, regrets, whether those regrets might inform who you are, how much they inform who you are, and, you know, which ones you can live with and which ones you'd like to not live with.
I should drag this back out and reread, because I vaguely remember it. I liked it a lot, but I don't remember.
And this is her directorial debut, right? Blake Lively is not.
I read somewhere the other day she directed an award-winning country music video. Oh, kind of an odd thing, but she directed some video the other... like last year or something like that, won an award for it.
She's trying to one up her husband. Is that what you're saying?
Who's her husband?
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, right.
I mean, yeah, she can be the artsy while he does the fartsy.
Sure.
I'm the director before you did.
Ryan Reynolds does do the fartsy.
Yeah. She'll be like, you're a punk ass, Reynolds. What else we got, Randy?
So then we've got Adam Sandler, speaking of fartsy.
Rare case where I am excited about this news.
Yep. He is making another movie with the...
Safdie Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, after... what do you call it? Uncut Gems, yep. A.K.A. Unca Jams.
Unca Jams.
If you don't know the deal, look up the meme. It's hilarious and bizarre.
It's an entirely uplifting film.
This movie is so anxiety-inducing that I know people who hate it because of the way it makes them feel. Now, I don't have normal human feelings, and so I was able to enjoy it.
I liked it okay, but I definitely left feeling like I didn't really need to see it again.
I think I've seen it like 3 times. Wow. It's the kind of compelling, uncomfortable movie that I like.
Did you guys see Good Time, the other one that the Safdie Brothers did? Did you like it?
I liked it. It was made me more uncomfortable than Uncut Gems.
Wow, okay.
I have not seen
it. But that stars Robert Pattinson.
Dave, you should really watch it because you like Safdie Brothers.
I'm sure I would. Does anybody happen to know where it's streaming?
When I streamed it, it was on Netflix or Prime. I forget which. Yeah.
If you were to summarize it in just a sentence, what's the premise?
Robert Pattinson is a bastard.
In what sense?
He's a criminal, kind of low-level criminal trying to save his own ass.
Okay. They do seem to work well with super narcissistic characters who only care about themselves. I've rarely seen that as embodied better than Adam Sandler in that. And, like, here's the honest truth. Even if you don't like that movie, I feel like he gave an Oscar-caliber performance in Uncut Gems.
Yeah, he was
just incredibly intense.
He didn't win. He lost.
Oh, that's because the Oscars are bullshit.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's given those performances a couple of times.
Right. Yeah, he's done a few other ones, but maybe they're his muse. What's interesting is that character. You really can't recur that kind of intensity of concept. And I know I don't think they would just repeat themselves.
No.
Although they do seem to, I guess, like the narcissist weirdos. But I wonder what he's going to be doing. You know, what character will they want from him? So I guess we'll find that out.
Complete opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all I know, you could be a great person in this.
So, this was a little bit... We don't always report on, like, little bits of report, like we're doing journalism here. We don't always talk about the stuff that's, like speculative, but I thought it was interesting enough. Apparently, they've picked up... The D&D movie is going to be set in the Sword Coast, so it is going to be set in Forgotten Realms.
Right.
There was speculation somehow that... Then the article went on to be like, and there's two cities, and it's got to be Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter. None of that. That's all made up.
Yeah, but the Sword Coast is Forgotten Realms.
Sure, Waterdeep on the Sword Coast? Like, why wouldn't you do Waterdeep?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe because it's so big. But yeah, like Waterdeep seems like the place to go to. But it's almost like if the story's not about Waterdeep, it has, like, such mega hooks of story. And, like, what is it, Undermountain and all that stuff attached to it.
But if we can just get the Beholder crime boss of Waterdeep in this movie.
Oh, man, that should be, like, the second movie or something like that.
Yeah, maybe so.
Like, they get in deep with him and, like, or he hires them and needs them to, like, pull a freaking fantasy heist, yeah, that'd be fucking yeah cool.
I'm just glad that it's going to be set in Waterdeep.
And not,
or
not,
or
not
a
Forgotten Realm. Not
generic
D&D?
Yeah.
Because their generic D&D worlds are always garbage.
I know that, the Forgotten Realms was created by Jeff Grubb, I
no,
guess, in
Ed
the 90s.
Greenwood.
Ed Greenwood, Jesus. Yeah, Ed Greenwood in the 70s, what, 70s
is
probably?
Is Ed Greenwood alive or did he die?
I don't know.
I think he died.
Yeah, people are...
I'm like, did they manage to... Did not have to pay him, basically?
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like we maybe hear more about that.
No, he's
but
still alive.
Most people, like, I do... A lot of people get shafted like that, and that sucks.
I'm just hoping for either a Boon Minsk cameo,
yes,
or a Drizzt.
Same.
Yeah, I think that will probably happen. You gotta be careful with, like, Drizzt, because he's... It's almost impossible to have him cameo and, like, not be, like, a big presence.
Take over the thing, yeah.
Yeah,
because
he's like one of the greatest warriors ever.
Or
it'd be like having, like,
Forgotten Realms that's, like, super...
Burner Battle Hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, actually, that would almost make more sense, because he's part of the Drizzt's world, but he is not, like, quite a legendary guy like that, at least not when they start out.
Yeah.
Or they could have Regis, the halfling. But anyway, or Kettybri. or Gwenivar the Panther. Anyway.
I'm saying, if people in the know would kind of freak out if Gwenivar showed up at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, the Forgotten Realms is the best known setting. It is frequently the canonical setting for D&D. They, right, like it's, they might hedge their bets and say there is no canonical setting, but the absolutely
yeah
the most often used one is Forgotten
Realms.
Well,
I mean, most of the modules they're putting out are set in the Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, and if people who play Baldur's Gate, that's obviously...
All I know is my interest meter in the D&D movie has gone up.
Yeah?
With this knowledge.
I just want them to not fuck it up. I really want a good D&D movie.
Yeah. I need at least 3.5 stars worthy out of 5.
Yes.
It cannot be just 3 or 2.5. No.
Yeah. John Woo is apparently remaking The Killer as a original TV show for Peacock.
Okay.
I'm wary of this. John Woo has not made a good movie in a while.
TV show, so it'll be multiple episodes.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Peacock's originals, one of the things, if we have topic time, I'm going to talk about one of them. Peacock's originals have been really good. Like, this is one of those streaming networks that I was like, why did you guys make a streaming network? And yet they've had, like, 6 shows I really liked.
Do you think Peacock has the budget for the massive amounts of doves that John Woo is going to need?
I think they probably do. I think they can afford the doves. Yeah.
The, you know, I forget exactly how it all goes, but I believe the killer, Chow Yun-Fat,
yep,
is there's a wildly melodramatic story to it where he is trying to do some big score to pay for an eye surgery for his, like, girlfriend so she doesn't go blind.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it's just ridiculous and melodramatic. Now, that said, amazing movie. I think you have to cram it all into 2 hours for its maximum punch. But I've seen things get expanded in TV and work. Right?
Yeah.
Every once in a while it works. So maybe... here's the thing. Like, John Woo became, like, as slow-mo as, I don't know, Zack Snyder, right? But if you ever watched the original ones, The Killer or Hard Boiled, which I think actually came out in the late 80s. They were released in America in, like, the 90s,
yeah,
but I think
yeah
they were came out in, like, 1989,
yeah,
something like that. There's a lot of just real-time gunfights that are just these brutal, insane, wild gunfights. And they happen in close to real-time... And that's what makes him so intense. And I wonder if there's any chance he could get back to that. Because if you had a show where there's, like, kind of, you know, like, 1 or 2 cool gunfights per episode, mm-hmm, it had his melodrama, but maybe with slightly stronger writing than he usually does, maybe?
I think it's doable. And I think Peacock can probably pull it off.
And that's the thing. I don't really, like, keep up with basically the streaming networks I don't have. I'm not a TV guy. But if they've got that track record... Maybe there's something they know that I don't.
We'll see.
I guess there was a 2018 set that fell through that had Lupita Nyong'o starring as a gender-swapped lead of The Killer, which is interesting.
A movie?
Yeah, it was a movie.
Was it going to be directed by Woo?
I don't know. It doesn't say one way or the other.
That does not overall seem like a great idea.
But I was also going to say, Dave, you won't watch this anyways because it's about an assassin.
but I've already watched it before the ban, technically.
So even if it's a new thing, because it's an old thing.
Because it's an old thing, yes. That's how I'm going to lawyer my way out of
this. Yes, yeah.
I like it.
Also, HBO Max has ordered a spinoff from Harley Quinn of Kite Man.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I saw a bunch of people saying that. That is catchphrase. I guess that's his catchphrase.
That is the weirdest thing, by the way.
But, like, isn't this character... I thought, like, some people that didn't like this character.
I know. People loved Kite Man.
Maybe it was only because... Kite Man dated what?
Poison Ivy.
So he was...
And they were going to get married.
So, in other words...
He was the guy... He was the nice guy that was between her and Harley. But
yes,
ultimately,
right.
Harley and Poison Ivy get together. He gets jolted at the altar. But
so,
he was like
right,
a...
Right, so he was like... But what might have seemed like... Preventing some
yeah.
the queer relationship
yeah.
that had been building for decades in the comics and
yeah.
stuff,
yeah.
and then like it might have looked like they were going to cop out.
Yes, and
they
I think that's why people didn't like it. But that's not the direction they went with it.
So y'all like Kite Man?
Yeah,
he's
super
great fun.
Yeah.
Who voices him? Anybody in particular?
I don't remember.
Oh man, I think it is somebody.
It's probably somebody. I thought the funniest reaction to this though came from Tom Taylor, because he posted when Kite Man got his series announcement.
Yep.
He posted the only time Kite Man's appeared in Deceased. When Superboy, or then you know, Cal's son, was it John
yeah.
Kent?
Yeah.
And Damian and Cassie are flying around the invisible jet, and they like accidentally hit invisible Kite Man, zombie Kite Man, and he just like scrapes along the windshield, and
yeah.
they just all bust out laughing.
Yeah.
That was Kite Man's appearance in Deceased.
That's pretty good. That's
and that is
good.
The level of respect he deserves. He's a dumb character.
Yeah, I don't. Broadly speaking, I never want them to try any more revivals of it. I know Tom King did this weird. Thing with Charlie Brown Kite trying
yeah.
to turn it into
yeah.
but like it's the kite string is like what his father hung himself with or
yeah.
something
yeah.
it's so ridiculous.
It's gotta be like Harley Quinn, basically self-aware of how dumb it is.
Right, right. Yeah, the
his
Harley
is,
Quinn show seems like when I've seen it has been quite good.
His name is Matt Oberg.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of been in a few things here and there, been in some movies, but for the most part not a huge.
Okay.
Dave, you should finish up Harley Quinn. It's good.
Yeah, it is. No,
it's good.
No.
No, you like things now.
Okay, Dave, don't watch it. Don't watch it.
I'm watching it tonight.
Two trailers to talk about. First one is Don't Worry, Darling, which is Olivia Wilde's directorial debut.
Yeah.
Yep.
And is a Florence Pugh and Harry Styles and
Chris Pine.
And it's been called the, what are they calling it? The Women's Get Out.
Yeah, something like that. And it's, you know, this is a trailer that's meant to be sort of eerie and sort of a little bit, you know, they don't want to, like, say exactly what's going on, but...
it's like Women in this 50s Paradise, but it's clearly something wrong.
Right.
Yeah, definitely like a psychological thriller kind
yeah.
of.
Right. There's vibes of, like, sort of Stepford Wives, that there's, like, some
yeah.
sort of project that keeps getting... A mysterious project that keeps getting mentioned, that it sounds like, you know, it's like, maybe this brainwashes women. So, by the way, people who don't know what Stepford Wives are... That was a 70s movie, kind of a satirical thing about guys replacing their women, their wives with robots, which would be like perfect wives making the food and having the sexy times.
Yep.
And stuff like that. They did a remake a few years ago. But anyway, no idea what the actual reveals will be in this, but it's got an eerie trailer.
Yeah, the trailer's good.
Chris Pine looks kind of menacing and creepy mm-hmm. in it.
Florence Pugh is always good.
Yeah, I got good vibes from the trailer, and
let's see if Harry Styles can act.
As long as it's getting like halfway decent reviews, I'm gonna check it out probably.
Then we have the Roku original Weird, which is the Weird Al biopic starring
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yep.
Yes.
Looks like fun.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, we were early on, I think we were like, there's kind of two main directions it seemed like they could go. They could go like, oh, Daniel Radcliffe was cast and isn't even going to try and imitate him. It's just going to be this wild, surreal thing. Or he's going to try and get into his headspace and like actually be like a serious Weird Al. Now, this is like kind of hard to tell because
yeah.
it's a quick cut trailer.
Yeah.
But and they make it look like it's going to be one of these biopics about, like, you know, like Freddie Mercury or a megastar.
Yep.
And then it's like he pops out with the accordion.
Yep.
and then there's no, like, extended scenes. You're just kind of getting the vibe. But to me, it does look like they're going with realistic, but maybe, like, slightly heightened.
Yeah.
Almost like it might be a little bit like how Weird Al sees the world
yeah.
or envisions his own life. Like, there could be weird sequences in it.
Weird Al is one of the true nice people in entertainment, so it's
kind
be...
of, you know, the way like Mark Hamill or something
yeah.
seems to be
yeah.
some of those guys.
Yeah,
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, like you hope all the good stories are true and
right.
that you never hear a bad story.
Right,
about
or like Bill Murray, who seems to be such a good guy.
But yeah, the trailer looked fun. Daniel Radcliffe looked like a suitably manic Weird Al.
Yeah, yeah. That looks fun.
He can pull that off.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Daniel Radcliffe said
and then
weird...
he can finally star in Nick's movie where you cast him as...
Wolverine?
Wolverine, yes.
That dude's had a weird journey, Daniel Radcliffe.
I still say, if he would be up for signing on for another mega franchise, which, honestly, I would understand if you said, hell no.
You're talking about a trilogy of Weird Al stories?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. Into the Weird Al-iverse.
He'd make a good Wolverine.
You'll have to ask Nick for more thoughts on Daniel Radcliffe and Wolverine.
Yeah, but don't do it while I'm here, because I don't want to hear it.
I want to hear it.
Do it while Dave's here.
He will be sexy Wolverine.
All right, now I'm interested. All right, that is all the news for the week. A lot of news this week, actually.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics week of Wednesday, May the 4th, and there's two Star Wars comics released on May the 4th.
Yes.
Oh, right, I forget.
But only one number one.
Many things this week, which includes the release of Doctor Strange 2, whatever that's called.
Doctor Strange, Strange New World, Strange New Star Wars, everything strange.
That's true, but also Free Comic Book Day and all that
which
stuff.
Which is also strange.
We were going to get the Obi-Wan Disney show.
That's right.
And they were like, wait a minute, no. We're going to push it back.
It is crazy to me that May the 4th is such a like big marketing thing, and they have no Star Wars releasing on it.
Well, we're going to get two Obi-Wan the first week of
yeah, no,
the
I know,
month.
But it's a little weird that they pushed it.
I
wonder what happened.
Probably a pandemic.
Yeah.
Or the visual effects weren't ready, or...
I bet Ian McGregor was like, I refuse to let this show come out on the 4th.
Sod it.
Yes. He's like, if you do it, I will counteract it.
However, we are getting Star Wars Obi-Wan number one this week.
Yes.
Should we jump into these?
Yes. This one's written by Christopher Cantwell and artist Ario Antindito? I don't know.
It's good art.
However, I will say this. I was telling Dave after I finished reading it,
oh,
I was like...
Oh, it's just one artist?
Yeah.
That's interesting because the framing thing when he's like in the...
Is a totally different style.
His old man is a very different style.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you saying, Nick? You were telling me...
You and I were having a conversation about Obi-Wan because...
Oh, right.
We just know him as kind of the wise old master, the one who will save us, but we don't know much about his back history. Or like
we saw a bit in the prequels of like
him
middle
as like
range.
Yeah, middle range, but nothing prior to that.
We haven't seen him as a youngling.
Yes,
correct. Youngling
they even
until
call
here.
Himself a youngling here. That's
he probably
what
does.
No, they do.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, outright. It's the book is actually called Youngling's Challenge.
I believe the framing device for this whole miniseries is that he is essentially keeping a journal on Tatooine and will be reflecting back on key periods of his history, which then like it'll like sort of be bookended by him writing about
it. His journals actually played a pretty big part in the Star Wars comic. Previous to this.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Luke found his journals and stuff.
Yep.
In this case, it actually, I ended up quite liking this issue.
I did too.
Even though I had no expectations of it. Like, I'm not like, I'm in such a mood for Obi-Wan stories. Not particularly.
I'm surprised about the choices made that we have old man Obi-Wan and youngling Obi-Wan, but not like the Obi-Wan who's going to be in the show.
I think what we're going to get is kind of a series of
jumping
through him. You know, probably the next one will be him at the temple, of course, or with Qui-Gon.
But it was cool to see him facing off with like the Black Sun.
And like the basic story has him it seems like maybe his first friend as a kid.
Yeah,
is this girl in the who's a young like a Padawan Jedi learner like him. They've done some training. They can. They do talk in kind of some neat ways. Like he sort of does his first force push kind of thing during a thing. But she is about to run away in the middle of the night from training. He's already just like out on the school grounds or whatever or temple grounds on Coruscant is like already breaking rules and stuff like
yep.
that. And then she is going off on her own, and he's like clearly has a connection to her. And what is he? You know, like 10. Something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Like
8 or 10.
Damien age.
Yep.
And ends up following her, into Coruscant, where he gets lost. He kind of gets behind on her, but, she's making, like, deals with, like, like criminals to like get a ship off world.
Yep.
Because there's a kind of some neat backstory about how you got to go down to the lower levels on Coruscant to like do something that's under the radar. And if you want to get off world, you can't do it in the upper levels. If you don't want to be known,
right?
If you want to do it under the radar, you got to go down low. And anyway. But yeah, it's an interesting thing about his like sort of first connection, and there is some action and stuff in there because he and this girl are like they're Jedi trainees. They know some stuff. It bodes well for me. I also like the framing thing, just with like seeing him as kind of a reflective older guy.
Yeah,
worried the detail about the sandstorm approaching and what that means on Tatooine and how people kind of batten down the hatches and stuff.
How it doesn't rain.
Yeah, he's like there's been one rain in like the 20 years I've been here. Anyway, I think we should use this to segue into this Dune miniseries.
All right, this Dune, yeah.
There's a Dune miniseries called The Waters of Canley.
It's not a one-shot?
Oh, maybe it is. I didn't get around to reading it. I was just going to mention it.
I thought it was a one-shot.
No, it says to be continued.
Oh, okay.
I actually don't want to say too much about this because it has to do with something that takes place right in after the... Where the Dune movie is split in two?
Yep.
It's going to be the cover events that will be occurring in the second movie, and I don't want to spoil that for y'all who haven't seen it, but suffice to say, it zeroes in on some characters, and it's sort of like, oh, well, all this was happening, you know, with, like, the Harkonnen attack on the Atreides, this was also happening. And it is stuff, I think, from the book, but that's been, from one of those books that expands by Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert. Anyway, I didn't read it. I didn't have a chance to yet, but
really nice artwork.
People who've been enjoying the Dune stuff and would like to see more of those characters, you can kind of get a cool side story here.
And then we've got Giant Size X-Men Thunderbird. This is the next in a series of one shots. I think Dave, you were sort of into this one. I think
and I think Nick, you ended up
I was
too. I wanted to read this because I knew that they had some indigenous creators working on it, like on both writing and art. And I was fascinated to see Thunderbird, you know, one of the first X-Men to very notably die. It was in like that, what is it? Was it Giant Size X-Men?
It was Giant Size X-Men.
The storyline that introduced Wolverine, Storm, Banshee, Nightcrawler. Yeah, he was a hot-headed Native American who hated the white man, and it was kind of very cliche of the 70s.
Yep.
But who kind of dies heroically, but also kind of taking a dumb risk. And so, because it's the age of Krakoa and everybody gets resurrected, this now asks the question, what happens to that guy when he's resurrected with many years having passed?
He takes it pretty well, honestly. I would be freaked the hell out. I mean, it's been, what, 30 years?
Well, I told Randy, one of the reasons... Well, I think probably, I bet only about 10 years are supposed to have passed otherwise for him.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons I wanted to read it, aside from to see like a kind of a true Native American vibe to it, was I was flipping through it, really liking the artwork, and...
David Cutler, by the way.
Okay. I wanted to see him push back a little bit on the Krakoa stuff because I figured he'd be as bewildered as I am by it sometimes. Yeah. And he says something like, mutant resurrection, mutant technology, a whole mutant island. I die and two white men go and build themselves a reservation, call it freedom. Yeah. I was like, oh, I liked his skepticism.
Yeah.
But this is mostly about him returning home to his reservation to try and get in touch with like a family member that like, most people didn't know about.
Not even his brother.
Not even his brother, who has taken his role, and he became, what was his code name?
Warpath.
Yep.
Another super thoughtful name. But look, he gets a new costume in this. There's a lot of thought as to like what goes into it to bring out both his heritage of his tribe and also hang on to his like mutant heritage as well. There's stuff going down in the reservation that allows for some action and for him to kick the shit out of some authority figures, which is always a good time. I enjoyed it. And there's the relative that you meet I really like. I super like this character. I don't think it's too big a spoiler to say. It's like it's his grandmother.
Yeah.
This is not like some big wild revelation. But she does show in it, and she's a very memorable character.
I mean, the issue is about family, honestly.
Yeah.
He remembers his family.
Don't tell Vin Diesel, he'll come and break it up.
I love the new costume. It is so cool looking.
It's a cool look, and I liked how, like, his interactions with, like, his brother and his grandmother talk about both, like, his kind of failings and his qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to help him chart, like, a new direction for his life.
There's some good action. I will say, I will compliment Steve Orlando and Nyla Rose, who's actually a, was it AEW superstar? She is the first transgender and Black and Native American wrestler.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
A wild grouping of backstories and heritages.
Yeah, it's awesome, and she brings a lot to this table because it seems like some of the elements are from her life, which I thought was kind of cool. I don't know. It was... There's more here than I was expecting.
And there's also kind of a sense of humor, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get this hulking dude, you know, he's always been a kind of throw fist first, think later.
Yep.
And his grandma's like, don't make me kick your ass. she's like his abuela. She's hardcore.
And I guess he's joining another X-book after this, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I liked it. It's a good little one-shot.
Yeah.
And I like to see him talk trash about Krakoa. What else we got?
I was excited this week about Image's new book, Twig.
Yeah.
This is Scotty Young and Kyle Strom, who... Strom's not the guy who... He's done other work with him. I don't remember what he's done.
Man, this artwork is super good.
Beautiful.
Was it on Middle West or something?
Maybe. No, I thought that was the same guy did me Love in the Dark. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
At any rate,
it's a fantasy series.
It's a fantasy series about a guy who goes inside a giant mountain's living mountain's mouth.
Yep. And you say guy, but this guy looks like a little furry muppet
man.
He looks like a Fraggle.
Yeah. Oh. So he goes and gets some stuff, goes back, and is supposed to go back out in the world and explore it, and there's a twist to it.
Yeah, he's...
So I will say, this. I don't think he's worked with Scotty Young before.
Okay.
Kyle Strom was the guy who did Spread.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This is such a different... Like, Spread was like a kind of gory horror
The thing. Yes. Yeah.
And this has, like, cute little creatures. Like, I will compare the style of this to... Like, it's a kind of an all-ages thing that vibes, like, Fraggle Rock, Bone, things like that.
Yeah.
It's got also Dark... Not Dark Crystal. It's not... Dark Crystal is darker. This is more like... what's the other one? Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Creatures and stuff in Labyrinth. Yeah. And yet it's got some of the same thoughtfulness and world-building that seems like it's becoming a hallmark of Scotty Young. It also reminds me of course, the Oz stories, which he drew himself with Eric Chanwer writing years ago.
And a little Dr. Seuss.
And a little Dr. Seuss, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The artwork, I can't overstate how good the artwork is.
It's really good.
That giant mountain he goes in, like, people might remember, like, in Zelda games and stuff like that, sometimes going inside things that are, like, giant creatures. And this really captures that in a cool way that sometimes I think only video games have been really good at doing.
Yeah.
The sheer size, Mount Guffin here, like, that is so cool.
But even if I'm just flipping through, like, the first couple of pages and I'm catching things the second go-around that I didn't, like, the log that the main character's crossing has these kind of... eyeballs that are attached to it.
Yeah, there's like little creatures and stuff everywhere. There's a montage double page spread that shows him journeying, and like every panel that's in here, I want to know about that place that they went to.
I mean, this is kind of the truest sense of adventure.
An actual kids adventure comic. It's pretty upbeat, you know. That's like it kind of Pixar would be if you want to think about what the tone is like. So it's got some heartfelt moments. But it's like nothing super scary or terrible happens in this. So really, really good for kids, especially kids who like that sort of fantasy vibe.
I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah, maybe my overall favorite book of the week.
It's definitely my favorite thing I read this week. It's really good. We've already had number zero, but we got issue one of Flashpoint Beyond.
Yep.
This is more of Batman investigating what went wrong, why the Flashpoint, the Clockwork Killer, but also why Flashpoint exists.
Oh, right.
Because he remembers it's not supposed... Flash was supposed to have fixed it.
Right. Yep.
Flash. So now he's getting in between the war between Aquaman and Wonder Woman. That has some developments.
Yeah.
And there's also some stuff going on in our world with, like, Barry Allen and our Batman. And a character I don't recognize at the end.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know it was going to poke into our world.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this is definitely...
That's good, because I feel like their dark Flashpoint world feels like I need a breather from it a little bit.
I don't know how it's poking into our world, because all the Justice League are dead.
Yeah, well, I think this happens just the same time that right before Justice League. This is all leading into Dark Crisis.
I know, I'm kidding.
And I think that if you're looking at a summer event for DC, this and the JLA 15, which we should have more of tomorrow or Thursday...
Those are your starts.
I'm just poking fun at DC timelines.
Yes, I do. Spider-Man 2099 gets a new reboot with Exodus. This is a event that's going to be like 4 issues, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Guest stars Ghost Rider 2099 is a Spider-Man up against this sort of like criminal Illuminati that runs the future.
And you said reboot, but it's more of just like a new series, right? Because it's not like they're not throwing out the old history.
No, they're not.
I can't remember Ghost Rider 2099's deal. Is he still like the Spirit of Vengeance?
He has a digital chainsaw hand, and I thought that was cool.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's actually a cool idea.
Yeah, it is. And it was originally created by Chris Piccolo. Has sort of a cool visual.
Yeah.
Again, digital or like kind of chainsaw.
Yep.
Extending from his arm.
We also have Metal Society number 1, which is not about heavy metal.
This is a future where, as I understand it, I think like robots have kind of taken over and sort of enslaved humanity. But I feel like there's like sort of still a shot to work your way out of like the drudgery of it if you can fight in these MMA things.
Yeah, you gotta fight robots in the arena.
Yep. And this is some lady who goes on to fight robots in the arena.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the art is super, super tight on this.
There's a new book from Aftershock called Dogs of London, which is, despite the cover and the title, not about werewolves.
The cover has like what looks like a Doberman's a bloody mouthed Doberman's head on a guy in a suit's body, the body of a guy in a suit.
Is it possible they haven't gotten to the werewolves yet?
I don't think so.
When I was making the sign for it, it seemed like Peter Milligan was writing a story about a tough London gang of the 60s, and I think they're called, like, the Dogs.
Of course.
Yeah, it is a 60s British crime thing.
Yeah,
okay.
And it's,
although
it's
I believe it may move to the present. I'm not 100% sure.
Might.
Because I think there was something about how, like, something that they did in the 60s comes back to sort of haunt them. Oh, wow, that art's really good.
I was going
to
say, the art reminds me of somebody that I can't... Yeah. Like, Chris Sprouse a little bit.
Well, it also looks like the kind of artist who drew Hellblazer and other 90s Vertigo stuff that, like, Milligan worked on.
This feels like a 90s Vertigo thing. It's a solid crime story.
Yeah.
So
I need to read that. That looks kind of fun.
Vault has Quests Aside, which is about a tavern in a fantasy world and sort of the odd occupants of it, which include, like, a woman who's married to a skeleton and a friendly giant who accidentally steps on people. It's sort of a comedy Cheers set in a fantasy world.
D&D meets Cheers.
And then there's new issues of Batman Beyond, Little Monsters, Radiant Black. And then we had a couple graphic novels. Maybe notably, Jane Foster, The Saga of the Mighty Thor, which has a cool new cover. It's not Peach Momoko. It has a vibe to it, though. But this collects Thor number 1 through 8, Mighty Thor number 1 through 5, 8 through 11, and 13 through 14, and then the Generations Unworthy Thor and the Mighty Thor, which teamed up Jane Foster and a time-traveling version of the original Thor. So basically, it's like, it's the big Jane Foster collection.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's the story of Jane Foster as Thor.
Marvel may or may not be gearing up for Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah, yeah. But if you have missed it, this is a good chunk to get that's the entire run in this thing. There's also Volume 5 of the Jason Aaron Thor, which I believe collects is like after this. I'm not sure how that all works.
So,
but yeah. So a couple big Thor collections, and then Dave, there was another thing from Adam Ellis that you.
Yeah, Adam Ellis. I think I forget what his webcomic is called, but like
it's really good. I like
it. It's really good, and I can guarantee you've seen it.
You've definitely seen it.
He did it like this is a really kind of fun high concept graphic novel. Everybody's seen those like strategy guides to video games, especially big thing in the 90s. But you know those ones that they would do like for Final Fantasy, where they would like list all the different spells in it and all the characters and all the locations and stuff. He did a graphic novel that's come out called Fever Knights.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of seems like it's like a fantasy. It's meant to actually look like a video game strategy guide, but it actually tells a story. You're supposed to read it from beginning to end, and you will learn about the characters and what happens. by reading the strategy guide.
Which is cool. That's a great concept.
Yeah, and this seems like, it reminded me a little bit of, like, anybody who's played Kingdom Hearts, the island you start on, at least, where it's kind of like, it kind of feels more modern. Like, there's, like, a city and stuff in this. There's, like, the kid is, like, a skateboarder. It's not, like, a full fantasy thing, but there's fantasy monsters and stuff in it. But it's, like, a sort of a somewhat lighter fantasy RPG. But, like, it starts out with a map of the world, and then there's the character write-ups, and they tell you, like, what their special weapon skills are, and, you know, whether they can do magic or not, and all of that, their likes and dislikes. There's a bunch of fun character bio stuff, and then it moves on to, like, key locations and monsters and stuff. Anyway, this looks pretty neat. I'm actually thinking about picking this up, so I definitely recommend it. It's called, again, Fever Knights. That's Knights with a K. Oh, and I got a quick throw out a shout-out. Anytime there's a good issue of one of those Jim Henson books that I like enough to buy the single issue, and there's another good one this week. It's that's Jim Henson's Storyteller. This current miniseries is called Shapeshifters, and this is a story about a kitsune, the fox shapeshifters of Japanese lore. As always, really stunning art, but actually a very also touching story. I was super into it. I liked everything about it. And it's a writer, the writer and artist are one and the same, Amelia Cilento. I almost never know the artists they choose on these. They usually seem to be, like, from a stable of Italian artists, or I've seen a lot of Italian artists. So, and I'm a little surprised because a lot of European stuff is kind of falls flat for me. But I don't know, these little standalone stories, maybe by not being, like, a big, long graphic album, they end up being better. But that's at least two that I've really liked out of the current Storyteller story series, the Shapeshifters one. So this is also me probably recommending the trade paperback when we get it in.
Right, I was going to say, if you want it now, you're going to have to either fight Dave for it or order it.
That's true. You should order it, though, because it's a super good kitsune story.
All right, that's comics for the week. We're going to take a break and then talk about some TV and movies. All right, we have talked previously about Halo, but I think when we talked about it, Nick had seen one episode, and you and I, David, maybe seen one or two?
I feel like I'd seen a little bit more than that.
I think I'd seen two, and you guys had moved
like
on.
Three or four or
something. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and now we're roughly at the half point of the first season, and we just want to revisit it and, like, kind of get Nick's thoughts on it, too.
Nick got on board.
Oh, yesterday I caught up, because I, like I said, been behind. I enjoyed the first couple. Weirded out by its kind of interesting pacing, because they
might even say slow.
Essentially, they stretch out long time periods between action sequences. Some might even say several episodes.
What I believe is there's a notable action sequence in episode one, and then not another one until episode four.
Yeah,
and then
there's minor stuff,
and then not a huge one until episode six.
Right. Episode 6 has a pretty big one.
It does. It has a pretty major one.
That's the one that has, like, warthogs and stuff roaming around. And
banshees.
Like, and banshees and a big old alien and stuff like that.
Yep.
But otherwise, this is kind of the story of, honestly, of, like, Master Chief's faith in the UNSC unraveling. He's finding out about, like, this. There's, like, because they find an artifact that's mysterious, and it's still mysterious, but it's clearly tied into something from his past.
And it's giving him memories.
Yeah, and he can activate it where no one else can.
Right. And in the very first episode, he removes, like, essentially the little chip in his spine that sort of subverts his emotions.
But you didn't do that the first episode. That's later on.
That's later on.
I thought it was the first episode. I thought that he stuck that dagger in.
No, the first episode ends with him and the girl flying off.
Because Cortana helps him.
Oh, right. And then she's like, he's supposed to, like, kill the one lone survivor of a massacre.
He comes back.
Basically, the artifact snaps him out of his kind of fugue state, abeille.
Perfect soldier.
Yeah, perfect soldier thing.
Yeah, he was going to kill the lone survivor of a massacre otherwise.
Yep.
And that's pretty awful, but then the UNSC is pretty awful.
Yeah, they're not great.
What they do invite you to do in this is, like, kind of question, as with any kind of story like this, is to, like, well, is the Covenant bad enough that they're needed? Because you do get to see some more of the Covenant, and certainly the Covenant are not portrayed as good guys.
No, they'll kill every human there is.
But it is more like the people in between, you see the sacrifices and cost for them.
Yeah.
Because there's a girl who is that lone survivor of the massacre.
Yep.
But, like, her people on her planet, they also wanted freedom from the UNSC human people because they were essentially getting trod upon.
Can I admit, I feel like that character is not a great character. She keeps getting people into trouble.
I actually think she's pretty true to what a human would be. Unfortunately, yeah, her luck is that she believes in something, and she thinks other people believe in the same thing.
And nobody does.
And nobody really does.
Yeah. Well,
even Soren is there to help her, but he's kind of out for money.
Yeah.
You could tell that there's a more altruistic nature to him, and sort of a...
this is Bokeem Woodbine's character. He's a Spartan who ran away as a kid that Master Chief let go when they
But he also has an affinity for Master Chief because he's his brother, essentially.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to let him down.
So with her character, I found that I like the idea. She's the rebel fighter who won't quit. Like, I like that idea.
I like the idea.
But she doesn't, like, she kind of hasn't shown, like, the smarts.
Yeah.
Because they made out that her dad was kind of a rebel leader. And it feels like, oh, she's still got a lot to learn, which is what Bokeem Woodbine is, like, trying to kind of protect her. But he also, like, she does seem to be keep asking people, like, hey, just help me start a revolution. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're going to have to be a little more strategic about it and, like, say, oh, maybe help us set up a supply line or some food or spies or whatever.
And her desire to start a revolution ended up getting her aunt killed. And
I think they could stand to do a little bit more work.
The crime lord who's taken over the planet.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
He's a piece of shit.
I love that guy, though. That's the guy who's in Pacific Rim as the other scientist.
Yeah, he's the other scientist, but he also was kind of the same smartass on that Doctor Who spinoff.
Oh, okay.
About the... It wasn't Broadchurch, but it had...
Torchwood.
Thank you. He was one of the guys on there who was kind of smarmy.
Okay.
So he's not playing far field.
He's doing a good job playing... He's essentially the... You know, on this kind of colony world, he sells out to the UNSC, basically lets them set up military bases there, and meanwhile he gets to kind of run it like a despot.
And he likes to wear sunglasses.
He likes to wear sunglasses, and he's a piece of shit.
Pablo Schreiber is actually doing an amazing job as Master Chief.
That's one of those interesting roles, like when you play quiet, kind of like when Pedro Pascal played The Mandalorian. It's a tough thing to play somebody that understated, who's kind of, he's mostly in kind of a state of kind of confusion.
Yeah.
Well,
he's also playing a person who has no memories and is slowly learning his backstory with us, and he's actually portraying that pretty well.
Yeah. A lot of that backstory turns out to involve essentially the founder of the Spartan program, Halsey. What's her full name?
Dr. Halsey.
Played by... Oh, crap.
She's doing a very good job of playing... She said something in the latest episode where she's talking to her daughter, because it is her daughter, right?
Yep.
And she says something like, family was never a concept I thought anything of. And she doesn't like, she's like, I can't say that I actually, anything about that has changed. She's like, but I'm sorry I didn't, like, almost like let you down easier. Or
Halsey's
like,
daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, the other scientist.
Her daughter with the general from UNSC.
Oh,
who's kind of been taking over some of her projects.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But I was like, that was like, they're playing Halsey as a person who is like so detached from, almost like from humanity.
Yeah.
And has been doing this so long. But I've really, usually, like, when you do a scene that's, like, a mother-daughter sequence like that, I was like, oh, she's gonna, like, be like, I'm sorry I wasn't a better mom to you.
No.
But no, she's like, yeah, I'm sorry it wasn't easier for you, but I just don't think much about family as a concept.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was an intense kind of sequence.
Yeah. Early on, I was going back and forth on whether or not her character was, like...
Halsey is a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But I was going back and forth, like, okay, is she doing things for the right reasons?
Right, because she was trying to protect the Spartans.
And I was like, okay, maybe not.
I mean, you could argue that she was a necessary monster, depending on your perspective and, like,
but now
exactly
I'm like, no, she's
yeah,
bad.
She's basically just, she's like protecting, the whole thing she's protecting is her private program.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't actually care about any Spartans.
And her desire for knowledge to sort of make first contact, but kind of like, I must own this technology that may or may not be the biggest power
Halo
in the world.
Technology.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a fun kind of political jousting going on between other people who, key people in the program, and who's going to take the fall for
things.
And
there's poor Cortana, who's just getting beat up.
Yeah, Cortana the AI, who...
actually is a good character.
Yeah.
But understandably, Master Chief is not in a state of mind to welcome her.
I wouldn't trust her.
Yeah, an AI stuck in your head that you're just told, yeah, this is going to help you out. Oh, but by the way, it can also shut you off, like literally turn off your nervous system if you try and like rebel in any way.
I did
if
not expect.
If you try and say, stab the doctor.
I did not expect
I
that.
I did not. He was like ready to rip he went out, her face off.
Well, also, this week's episode where he like shoved her in, he's like, yeah, there was a, the guy created a,
he thought about every technology except for this.
So I locked her in this room and she's going to die.
From radiation poisoning.
And he was basically doing it just to test to make sure that Cortana couldn't take him over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great sequence.
Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for the disillusionment of Cortana understanding the US or the UNSC is not good.
I think
good.
We're going to get there.
Here's the thing. Like, I know these elements are all in the games, that they did show that like the Spartan program takes kids at a young age, that it's probably kind of a little horrific. But I assume that the games at least somewhat must vibe towards, but it's all worth it to take on the Covenant or whatever.
I have no idea.
I'm like, this feels like almost like one of those things like, is there coming back from this? This feels like the story of some alternate timeline where Master Chief and a bunch of other Spartans end up rebelling from the from the program.
Yeah.
Because there's another really interesting Spartan that we've seen more of, and I forget what's her... Kai?
Mm-hmm. Kai,
And she's been an interesting one because she's working closely with another scientist, the daughter of Dr. Halsey.
But she also watched Master Chief pull out his chip.
Right.
She does the same.
Yep. And it's funny, the other Spartans around her, they're just kind of like, kind of grunts, mm-hmm. right? They're just like, she's like, I don't know, at some point she's like, you ever wonder about like why they ask us to do this? And he's like, nope. Mm-hmm. You know?
However, her taking out her chip is able to help the daughter sort of understand Covenant language and sort of...
She has a weird sort of friendship bond with the daughter in her slightly, what I feel like is a slightly manic state.
Yeah.
It's almost like if Master Chief went depressive, she went manic.
Yeah. But also, the Spartans have so much more to them beyond just the tools. They have spent so much time with the Covenant, so they know their tech, their language, their more... And because they don't have the emotions to express that... They can't
make proper use of it.
Correct.
So yes, there may actually end up being a tactical advantage to this.
I also love saying that the weapon, the Needler, was her favorite. Because I loved using that gun in that game. I think it was so cool.
I did not expect it.
It's the one that has the needles that go into somebody and explode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which they do to great effect in the big action sequence.
So, Nick, criticisms. What do you got? Anything notable?
I don't
notable?
Have criticisms.
I feel like there's a little bit of repetition. Like once like they got to the home world of... what do you call it, Master Chief, and where he was it the kid. Yeah. Like, they might have, like, I knew they were going to eventually find, like, his house or, like, dig up some records and stuff like that. And, like, maybe it took a little while getting there. A little too much Lord of the Rings travel time.
I get that.
But, like, that's the thing is, like, I've been watching it pretty regularly each week and keeping up, so it's compelling me.
It's good, but it also...
It's subversive. That's the other thing, is I did not expect it to be subversive.
I also really appreciate a show that can kind of keep me guessing. Yeah. Because allegiances are one thing, but also I'm like...
Well, again, like, I don't see, like, a way that they quite recover from this. Although Master Chief has, at times when he's, like, kind of gone back to the arms of the UNSC, he's like, oh, well, all right, I need to do this because this thing is such a dangerous weapon or whatever. Yeah.
But if somehow Master Chief is able to sort of turn the UNSC into something greater... Or, like, if he can oust,
I have a feeling
like,
that
people...
will be the balance. Is they're going to see that there's a tactical advantage to having him being a little bit more open... And they're going to decide that they'll allow it.
But also it comes down to the fact that it's kind of nice that I don't know this property.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know where it's going. Where other people are like, this is not my Halo. And I'm like, I have no idea what Halo is.
Yeah.
This is a good Halo to me.
Well, I also told Randy, I don't actually have Halo liked on Facebook or anything, but like I think I get the occasional promotion. Oh, I think I might have the show liked.
Yeah.
And so every once in a while an ad for it shows up. I don't know if you've experienced this before, but sometimes when you get promoted material and you look in the comments, if it's anything remotely controversial, you get all the trolls and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And so I expected, because I knew that people didn't like that he took off his helmet and...
every chance he gets. When he's not driving a Warthog.
It is almost a little comical.
I kind of laugh with it. I'm liking it.
I know one of our friends was like, takes off his helmet in the first episode, gets naked in the second episode. Like, you can't get more taking the armor off than that.
Yeah.
But... I have been a little surprised to see how many people who love the game are on board it.
Yeah.
That are like, okay, maybe this isn't like the story that they know or a story they've heard before. Maybe they don't love everything about it. But a lot of them are like, it's well done.
I will also just compliment them on a few other things. Special effects, I think the first episode, there were some wonkiness. But, like, some of, like, the solar system shots and, like, the on-planet stuff, I'm like, that's gorgeous.
I know, Dave, that you have had some issues with the CGI, and I may just be a little blind to CGI.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the action sequences are all phenomenal.
They're quite good. Every once in a while, I feel like, you know, it's really the same thing as, like, the very highly budgeted Marvel movies.
It just becomes a little video game.
Sometimes when you've got too many characters running around and they're all CG, I kind of notice it.
Well, and when you have a full CGI character like Cortana, but she integrates really well.
Cortana's meant to look...
Cortana has got to be motion capture, right?
I don't know.
She looks a little unreal.
But I feel like that's got to
be... I mean,
be
that could be a filter or something.
I think it's an actress doing a filter. I don't think that's a full CGI character.
I know her voice doesn't sound the same, but isn't it based on Halsey?
And it's based on Halsey, but it's a different actress.
It's a different actress, okay.
I'm almost sure. I'm going to look it up.
Just as a quick aside, the chick who's the Covenant chick?
Yes.
I like her, too.
Yeah, I do,
it's
too.
Another person who, like Halsey, it's hard to quite know exactly what her ultimate motives are. Like, she doesn't seem to be shy about maybe killing people. But, like, it's hard to know exactly where she wants to take it.
Cortana's played by an actress named Jen Taylor.
Okay.
Well, she voices
her. Well, she's the voice of Cortana in the...
In the games?
In the games.
But yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's got to be... Because she looks different than Halsey.
Natasha McElhone is credited as playing Cortana.
Is she?
Yeah, in the cast list, she is Dr. Halsey and Cortana.
She definitely looks a little CG.
At IMDb, she's not.
Oh, where?
She definitely looks a little CG-ish. It's clearly, it's got to be either a filter or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
The effect is good. I was also going to say the sound design is really cool. I love the chunk of Master Chief's steps. It is very effective on whatever surface he's walking on.
You always know when that dude's coming.
Okay, so I found an article. Jen Taylor does the it is motion capture. She's not in the show.
Okay.
She provides the movement. It's like a motion capture thing. It's Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
So it's motion capture. Yeah.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
So we like this show.
It's integrated really well.
Yeah.
And I like the show quite a bit.
Yep. If it happens to end strong, I will have to be like, I'll be like, I'm pretty impressed with that.
Yeah.
It's already like becoming like the best video game TV show for me.
Yeah, I think it's for sure the best video game show.
Yeah. We'll have to have a fuller conversation about that when it ends and see what else is in competition.
Because it could suck on the last episode.
Yeah, I don't think so. I feel like
their track record is good.
I watched, there's a 10-episode show on Peacock called Killing It.
Yeah.
It's got Craig Robinson, also Claudia O'Doherty, who is adorable Australian woman. Did you watch Love on Netflix?
I didn't, actually.
She played Birdie, the Australian roommate. She's great. I love her. Basically, they're two down-on-their-luck Floridians. She drives for Uber and works for TaskRabbit and lives in a... she tows a billboard that she lives inside.
Okay.
So she's basically homeless. He is divorced and has a daughter. And as they start this, he's like trying to start a business, opening this farm for berries that help with men's prostates.
Okay.
And he's trying to pitch this, and he's basically like wants to be a businessman, but they've never worked out. And he meets her; she's like his Uber driver to get into this meeting where he's trying to get funding.
Mm-hmm.
And she stops. She's like, "Hold on a minute!" And she gets out of the car with a hammer and smashes a python and brings the python corpse into the car.
Okay.
And what this show is about is that in Florida, and this is true, they have a python killing competition every year, and the city pays $20,000 to whoever brings in the most length of pythons because there's
just
so many
to keep them from getting out of
because
control.
There's so many snakes in the Everglades.
Good God!
So there are people running around.
I'm never going to Florida.
There are people running around Florida. We live in Texas.
But we needed a reason to not go to Florida.
There are people running around Florida killing snakes for the good of the state.
Okay,
and that's what they're doing. And there's also another guy. Guy played Jimmy on The Mick. He's a fantastic.
Yeah, hilarious. I remember.
He is like their rival, and then he becomes sort of part of their crew. So they are basically dealing with their own like divorced mom stuff that they got, divorced parents stuff that they got going on, and they've got all messed up lives, and also they're in this snake hunt. It is a very weird, very dark, very funny show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I love Craig Robinson, so I was it was on my radar, but I wasn't, like, for sure going to watch it. But
this is definitely worth a look.
It sounds like a pretty funny concept.
Peacock has done some pretty good sort of dark comedy stuff. They've also got The Bust Down, which is really, really funny.
And then Girls 5 Eva.
And Girls 5 Eva.
Just started back up. Yeah.
So their lineup is actually pretty good. So I would recommend giving this one a shot, especially if you are a fan of Craig Robinson. Nick, you watched Michael Bay's movie Ambulance.
I did, and if you don't like Michael Bay, you're probably not going to watch this.
I don't like Michael Bay.
No, here's the thing, though. You are not the first person I have heard who said it's a vibes different from at least most of his stuff, or, like, it feels a little different.
It definitely feels different. It feels very much early Michael Bay as opposed to sort of crazy racist Michael Bay towards the later part of his career.
So you're talking about, like, Rock and Armageddon Bay as opposed to, like, Transformers 5.
And I will... Michael Bay. And I will also say that...
You know, there was a... They had... the Devastator robot had giant wrecking ball balls in it.
I'm aware. Do you remember that?
Or do you remember when Bumblebee peed on...
He's a good actor. John Turturro.
John Turturro, yeah. So not so much that one.
There was not any kind of that, like, raunchy humor that I was
schoolboy shit.
Yeah, there was not that. So the basic premise is fairly interesting and simple.
Remind me again.
It is two brothers who grew up basically Jake Gyllenhaal and his father are career criminals. Yahya Abdul-Mateen is sort of adopted brother who worked with his family on occasion, but to escape them, went into the military.
Okay.
He is out. His wife is sick. She needs a special surgery. To do that, he goes to his brother for a loan and ends up getting wrapped up in a bank heist that goes south.
That sounds typical of the American healthcare system.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Completely.
But I'm going to guess maybe Bay doesn't have a nuanced spin on that. That's just kind of the kickoff.
Yeah, it's the kickoff. It doesn't, like, highly focus on it, but it does definitely...
acknowledges sort of, that it sucks.
Yes, acknowledges that it sucks. And also, one of the other main characters is a... I forget her name, but she is the EMT in the ambulance that ultimately plays a huge part of the story. It is high octane action extravaganza.
So the bank robbery goes wrong.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me basically Michael Bay watched Heat and focused on one scene, basically the bank heist, but then afterwards is sort of like the follow up chase. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays a phenomenal, insane person. He has just got so much charisma and intensity.
Jake Gyllenhaal was in Nightcrawler, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
he is.
Very different vibe, I'm sure, but, like, that was another good case of playing
If you took his character from Nightcrawler and upped his charisma, so he was actually more of a likable individual as opposed to a scummy.
Extremely unlikable.
But with that undertone, that's his character.
Okay.
And Yahya Abdul-Mateen is pretty much your good guy. I mean, he's trying to do the right thing for the wrong reason, or the wrong thing for the right reasons. And then the cops get involved, of course, and Michael Bay does love his cops and kind of the intensity, militaristic overtones of that.
I could never imagine him really giving that up.
One of the main cops is played by Matthew Dillahunt, the Terminator.
No, Garrett Dillahunt.
Garrett Dillahunt, sorry. I forgot his first name. But, he is always good.
He's always good in everything he's been.
And a lot of the other people you'll recognize, they're bit players you've seen before. But it all focuses on just Jake Gyllenhaal and Yahya Abdul-Mateen and their chemistry. And it's really good. It ran a little long, I thought, but I was never bored. And I went into this thinking it was going to just be okay.
Sometimes the problem for me with Michael Bay movies is actually that, like, it's almost like he goes into, like, kind of frantic action mode, and then, like, it never breathes that well. Like, I need, like, some time to calm down sometimes, and, like, it's like...
There are moments of breathing in this, but it is pretty much...
Pretty adrenaline-y?
Adrenaline, pedal to the metal. Once you press go, there's very little stopping.
I'm curious. I may check it out. I may check it out to see what I can see, give it a half hour... then turn it off and yell at you. No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, I watched a lot of movies over the weekend, and that one is definitely my favorite.
Okay.
All right. I think that is it for us this week. Ran a bit long. Hopefully it was enjoyable to y'all.
An epic, yes.
An epic poem. And until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.